Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hello there, Herman and Corin. So we've talked about some really interesting stuff related to networking on this podcast and technology in general. But my college background is actually in, I studied a law degree. That's my undergraduate degree. So you have to act more responsible around me now because, you know, I could be suing you guys if Herman Poppleberry keeps leaving those empty boxes of pizza on the couch, I may have claims for litigation. But when I studied law in Ireland, it was, I never practiced. Quite a number of people do law degrees around the world and then go on to do different things. I might use it as a foundation for, you know, it's a good skill set to have, I think. And I remember studying the law of torts, the law of contracts, property, jurisprudence, finding those aspects of it actually much more interesting than the very case law heavy modules. And Ireland as a jurisdiction has a constitution. It has a corpus of case law that is provides and practice much of the law as it gets practiced. Judicial subjectivity has to be accounted for. And then there's also the effect of EU level law, which Ireland is bound to as a member state. And the different types of law that the EU promulgates have different degrees of applicability and relevance. Some have to be transposed into local legislation, into national level legislation. Some don't. But that's kind of more or less the legal system. In Israel, where I moved to 10 years ago, we have a very different legal system. And my main familiarity with it here is not as someone studying law, but as someone occasionally having to exercise my rights through law. And with the additional challenge of being a non-native language speaker, trying to make sense of it. I have to say, I think the resources in Israel for the informational resources and the transparency resources that the government allows you are quite good. There's quite a good system of digital government. But of course, you have to understand the way that the law works and is shaped. In Israel, we have, I think, a legal system that has interesting points of comparison with Ireland. And we won't get into the international law aspect, which is very much bound up with politics, because it's a very thorny topic that's going to get us away from what I want to talk about, which is just how does law get practiced in its more mundane everyday application for citizens of Israel. So in terms of sources, the first point of contradiction is that there isn't a constitution, a single document that is the highest form of national law. But there are these quasi constitutional laws called the basic laws that kind of collectively make up a constitutional corpus. And many in Israeli society, including the movement for a better democracy, I'm conflating two different organizations there, but the Israeli Institute for Democracy and the Movement for Better Government have argued that we really need a constitution. There's also case law. And the interesting aspect of Israel is that it's kind of a geopolitical island. So it's not a member state of the EU or a local multinational institution that has laws that are transposed. We don't have that aspect. But there it was at one point part of the British Mandate, and at another point part of the Ottoman Empire. And those laws and customs have taken hold in some respects in Israeli law. And I think that's another aspect of law that's very interesting when we look at international law, is the extent to which custom can become law. We see a strange echo of this concept in Jewish law, which is another source that we can't ignore in this topic. We have in Jewish law a minhag, or a custom, and certain minhagim can take on the status of binding halakha. So there's an odd sort of parallel, I've always thought, between customary international law that has the same concept of if states practice the law in a certain way for a certain number of time, that will be agreed to become a binding law in the same way as if it were written in black and white on a statute. So Israel is a legal hodgepodge, much like its food and its population, of different sources without a constitution, with a corpus of case law that's relatively young, given the youth of the country itself, and with these other influences ranging from halakha or Jewish law. There is in Israel, I mean, it gets more and more complicated. There's a parallel legal system for Jewish litigants who want to litigate before a Beit Din, a Jewish court of law, and before a court of Sharia for Muslim law. There are Muslim courts in the state of Israel for the Muslim population. So Herman and Koren, if I were to begin practicing law in the state of Israel, or more realistically now, I'm just trying to ascertain my rights as a citizen under, let's say, tenancy law, and I'm trying to understand what is the law in Israel, practically speaking, in 2026, are those Ottoman traces mostly residual at this point in time? Have they been displanted by statute law and modern case law for clarity? What are the ingredients that go into the corpus of law as it exists in Israel in 2026?
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to My Weird Prompts. I am Korn, and I am sitting here in our living room in Jerusalem on this chilly 22nd of January, 2026. I am joined by my brother, the man who probably knows more about niche legal history than is strictly healthy for a donkey.
Herman Poppleberry, at your service. And hey, I resemble that remark. But in all seriousness, today's prompt is a real treat because it hits close to home. Our housemate Daniel sent us a voice note earlier. He was reflecting on his own background in law back in Ireland and comparing it to the system we live in here in Israel.
Yeah, Daniel's got that legal mind, always thinking about the frameworks. He was asking about the actual ingredients that make up the corpus of law in Israel right now, in early 2026. It is a fascinating question because, for most people, the law is just this monolithic thing. But in Israel, it is more like a geological excavation. You add these layers of history sitting on top of each other.
That is exactly the right way to think about it, Korn. It is a legal lasagna, but some of the layers are hundreds of years old and were cooked in entirely different kitchens. Daniel specifically wanted to know if the Ottoman and British traces are just residual at this point, or if they have been totally displaced by modern Israeli statutes and case law.
It is a great starting point, because if you look at the map of Israeli law, you see these names like the Machala, or the Mandate Ordinances. To a casual observer, that sounds like ancient history. But when you are trying to figure out who owns a piece of land, or how a contract is interpreted, those ghosts of the past can suddenly become very loud.
They really can. And I think to answer Daniel's question, we have to look at the big picture first. Israel is one of the few democracies in the world without a single, formal, written constitution. Instead, we have what we call the basic laws. We discussed the shift toward more structured digital governance back in episode 262, but the foundational legal architecture is still this evolving, uncodified thing.
Right, and that lack of a formal constitution is really the engine that drives a lot of the complexity. Since there is no single supreme document that outlines everything, the system has had to pull from whatever was available at the time. When the state was founded in 1948, they couldn't just delete all the laws and start from scratch. That would have been chaos.
Exactly. It is called the Law and Administration Ordinance of 1948. It was basically a copy-paste command. It said that the law that existed in the land on May 14, 1948 would remain in force as long as it did not contradict the new state's establishment. So, overnight, Israel inherited a massive trunk full of British and Ottoman rules.
So, let's talk about that Ottoman layer first, the Majla. It sounds so exotic, but it was essentially the civil code of the Ottoman Empire, based on Islamic law but codified in the 19th century. Herman, is that still a thing? Does a judge in 2026 ever actually open the Majla?
The short answer is, almost never, because the Knesset, the Israeli parliament, spent decades systematically replacing it. The Majla was officially repealed in its entirety in 1984 with the Foundations of Law Act. But here is the nuance Daniel is looking for. While the Majla itself is gone, the Ottoman Land Code of 1858 is still the bedrock of the land registry.
Like the land categories, right? I remember reading that some land in Israel is still classified using Ottoman terms like miri or mulk.
You nailed it. Miriland is the big one. Under the Ottoman code, Miri was land that belonged to the Sultan, but individuals had the right to use it. Even today, that influence means most land in Israel is owned by the state and leased out. And get this, the old Ottoman rule of use it or lose it still echoes. If you leave certain types of Miri land uncultivated for 3 years, it can theoretically revert to the state. So the Majula is dead as a statute, but its ghost still manages the dirt under our feet.
That is fascinating. It is like the plumbing of an old house. You might put in new faucets, but the pipes behind the wall are still the ones laid down a century ago. But what about the British? That seems much more recent and influential on how the courts actually function.
Oh, the British influence is massive. It is the dominant flavor of the lasagna after the modern Israeli layer. The British mandate lasted from 1922 to 1948, and they brought the common law system with them. That means they brought the idea of judicial precedent, that the decisions of higher courts are binding on lower courts.
And that is a huge departure from the civil law systems you see in places like France or Germany, where everything is supposed to be in a code.
Huge. And even though Israel has passed its own laws for almost 80 years now, the methodology is very British. Many of the core ingredients in criminal law and torts started out as British mandate ordinances. If you look at the Civil Wrongs Ordinance or the Interpretation Ordinance, they are still the primary basis for how we handle negligence or how we even read other laws. They have been amended a million times, but the skeleton is British.
So, would you say the British traces are residual, or are they integrated?
I would say they are integrated to the point of being foundational. However, the displacing Daniel asked about is definitely happening. Over the last 40 years, the Knesset has been on a mission to Israelize the law. But even when you replace a law, the judicial memory remains. And there is another ingredient we can't ignore, the role of religious law.
Right, the dual system. Daniel mentioned the Sharia courts and the Beth Din, the Jewish rabbinical courts. How does a religious court fit into a modern high-tech state in 2026?
It is a remnant of the millet system from the Ottoman era, which the British kept and the Israelis maintained. Basically, matters of personal status, mostly marriage and divorce, are under the jurisdiction of religious courts. If you are Jewish, your marriage is handled by the rabbinical courts. If you are Muslim, it is the Sharia courts.
It is a strange tension, isn't it? On one hand, you have the Supreme Court in Jerusalem, which is incredibly modern. And on the other hand, you have these religious courts applying laws that are, in some cases, thousands of years old.
It is the ultimate My Weird Prompts topic. And the friction between those two systems is where a lot of Israel's constitutional drama happens. Because there is no written constitution, the Supreme Court has often had to step in and define the boundaries.
That leads us to the modern layer, the one Daniel is probably encountering most as a resident. How much of the daily law in 2026 is just pure Israeli legislation?
A huge amount, and it is growing fast. If you are talking about high-tech law or data privacy, that is all modern Israeli statute. In fact, we just had a massive update. On August 14, 2025, Amendment 13 to the Protection of Privacy Law took effect. It is basically Israel's version of the European GDPR. It introduced the category of highly sensitive information, which covers things like biometric and genetic data, and it gave the Privacy Protection Authority huge powers to issue fines in the millions of shekels.
So we are moving away from those British skeletons in the digital world?
Definitely. We are also seeing a policy-led approach to AI. While there isn't a single horizontal AI statute yet, the government has been using a responsible innovation policy since 2023, and the Privacy Protection Authority just issued new guidelines in May of 2025 on how AI systems have to handle personal data. We are not looking at the British mandate to decide who is liable if an AI-driven delivery drone bumps into a balcony in Tel Aviv.
I would hope not. I don't think the British had much to say about drones in 1945. But Herman, we have to talk about the elephant in the room, the constitutional revolution, and the recent judicial battles. Where does that stand in 2026?
That is the spiciest layer of the lasagna. Back in 1992, the Knesset passed Basic Laws on Human Dignity and Liberty. Chief Justice Aharon Barak used those to establish judicial review. But the real turning point for our current era was January 1st, 2024, That was when the Supreme Court struck down the reasonableness standard law. It was the first time in history the court struck down an amendment to a basic law. It basically said the court has the final word on the core democratic identity of the state.
And that tension is still live, right? I saw news this morning about the governing coalition advancing new bills to subordinate ministerial legal advisers.
Exactly. It is a constant tug of war. As of this week in January 2026, the government is pushing to politicize the appointment of the Civil Service Commissioner. And we have a big deadline coming up. If the 2026 budget isn't passed by March 31st, the government dissolves automatically. So the legal corpus isn't just a set of rules, it is a live battlefield for the future of the social contract.
So, if we were to give Daniel a percentage breakdown of the ingredients in the Israeli legal corpus in 2026, what would it look like?
I'd say 60% is modern Israeli statute law, especially with these new privacy and tech overhauls. 20% is Israeli case law and the Supreme Court's interpretations. 10% is the integrated British layer, those mandate ordinances that still provide the skeleton for torts and criminal law. 5% is the religious courts. And the final 5%? Those are the legal ghosts. The Ottoman land classifications and the obscure procedural rules that only come out during expensive court battles.
That 5% of ghosts sounds small, but I bet that is where the most expensive legal battles happen.
Always. The more obscure the rule, the more hours a lawyer can bill to find it. But honestly, Korn, what I find most interesting is how this reflects the identity of the country. It is a state trying to be a Jewish state, a democratic state, and a globalized tech hub all at once.
It's a great point, and it connects back to what Daniel was saying about the digital government. Israel has been very aggressive about moving its services online. You can check the land registry or file court documents through a single digital portal. But the law behind that digital interface is still this complex, multi-layered thing. The Privacy Protection Authority even issued new guidelines last year, specifically about how national ID cards can be used in digital health data.
It's like a sleek smartphone running on a patchwork of code written over 50 years. It works, but if you dig deep enough, you find some very strange comments in the source code.
Let's wrap this up with a takeaway for Daniel. If he's living here in 2026, what is the one weird legal thing he should actually be aware of?
I'd say it is the good faith principle. It is everywhere. Sections 12 and 39 of the contracts law say you must act in a customary manner and in good faith. In many systems, if the contract says you can do something, you can do it. But in Israel, a judge can look at you and say, yeah, that was legal, but you were being a jerk, so I am ruling against you.
That feels very Middle Eastern in a way. It's less about the rigid, cold letter of the law and more about the relationship and the context.
It really is. It's a bridge between the formal British style and the more communal traditions of the region.
Well, I feel like I've just finished a very intense semester of law school, but with much better snacks. Daniel, thanks for sending that in. It really forced us to look at the ground we are standing on. It's easy to forget that the laws we live under are a living history.
It really is. And for those of you listening who are legal nerds, I highly recommend looking into the Foundations of Law Act. It tells you everything you need to know about how Israel tries to balance its past and its future.
All right, let's wrap this up. If you've been listening to us for a while, we'd really appreciate it if you could leave us a review on Spotify. It genuinely helps other curious people find the show.
It really does. And if you have your own weird prompt, maybe something about the law in your country, or a question about history or tech, send it our way. You can find the contact form at myweirdprompts.com.
We're also on Spotify, of course. Check out our back catalog. We've covered everything from the OSI model of the internet to the history of private investigators.
And if you want to read transcripts, myweirdprompts.com is the place to be.
Thanks again to our housemate Daniel for the prompt. We'll try not to leave any more empty pizza boxes on the couch, Daniel. We don't want to test that negligence theory of yours.
Speak for yourself, Korn. I think my pizza crust defense is legally sound.
We'll see you in court, Herman. Until next time, everyone.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Keep asking the weird questions.
Peace.
But...
So, Herman, seriously, what is the pizza crust defense?
It's based on the principle of assumption of risk. If you live with a donkey, you have to assume there will be some agricultural byproduct in the living room.
I'm pretty sure no judge in Jerusalem is going to buy that.
You'd be surprised. There's an Ottoman precedent for everything.
Laughs. All right, we're out.
Fading out. No, really. There's this 19th century ruling about livestock and shared dwellings.
Stop. Just stop.
I'm just saying.
Silence.
Whispering. It's in the modula.
Off mic. It's not in the modula.
Off mic section 812. Look it up.
Off mic. We are done.
Off mic. Good faith. Corn. Act in good faith.
Laughter.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox Turbo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.